Welcome back to this week's episode of Blake and Tom Interview Everybody. We are already in our fifth week, which is, it seems like time really flies. But last week, who do we have on, Blake?
We had Luke, and the week before we had Austin, both of them brothers, both of them cousins. Great stories. Go check it out.
And this week we have on my brother, Stevie. So thanks for coming on, Stevie.
Happy to be here.
All right, this is our fifth time recording this one. So this week is really interesting because last week we had on a couple people who are younger than us, and with Allie and Nick. Nick's the only one older than us, but Stevie's 3.5 years older than I am, and you are our first parent on the show. So what's it like being a new time parent?
It's been an interesting year, for sure. My daughter was born in the middle of May, which was in the middle of the pandemic, and it made life really interesting. I'm sure everybody that's been a parent has gone through, there's a really big a learning curve. No matter how many books you read, no matter how much you study and you look things up, everything's always, it's overwhelming the first time through, and then you get more used to it. But, with COVID-19, it just made everything more stressful due to the fact that we had to limit who could see Nora, family side. We had to limit who we could see on the friends side. Every day I came home from work, I'd have to take a full shower, put on new clothes, and it makes everything a little bit more difficult. Things have been definitely looking up. My wife and I both got our first rounds of the vaccine, so we're looking forward to loosening up some of the restrictions that we put in place with regards to family and things like that. But it's definitely been it's been a learning curve, but it's been the most rewarding experience of my life so far, for sure.
So we'll take it back because we're hopping into kind of like the now, but if you feel comfortable sharing, when did you find out that you were going to be a father?
I think it was around September of 2019. So this was before COVID hit. My wife and I decided let's try to have a family. We're very fortunate that we were, my wife was pregnant, pretty quickly. It was a Sunday. I met you and, Tommy. I met my, mother, dad, and Tommy for some ice cream. And then later on in the day, Megan and I did a walk. And we walked out to the place that I proposed to her, and then she told me that we were going to have a baby. And it was very exciting. Yeah, it was in the middle of beginning of September, somewhere around there. And that was it was just extremely exciting. I remember the first times really looking forward to telling my family that my wife was pregnant. That was still one of the happiest times of my life, was telling Tommy and mom and dad that they were going to be, mom and dad were going to be grandparents, and Tommy was going to be an uncle. It was amazing in the beginning, just only looking up.
And I remember that day because I know mom screamed, and I thought, oh, well, great. Obviously sarcastic, but I thought somebody died, and I didn't know who died. So I came out off the couch with the dogs, and then Megan handed me the shirt that said Galaxy's Best Uncle, and that's my favorite shirt.
No, obviously, Tom and I are not parents, and one day we hope to be parents. So that, everyone always says it, and I'm sure it's the case, but the moment you got that news that you were going to have a kid, was it completely life-changing? Your perspective on life, everything, did it completely just change when you prepared for this? And
actually, no. It didn't change for me, and it seems like, people say, oh, your life changes right then and there. It didn't for me. And I think the reason it didn't for me is, just due to a gender thing, I didn't have the baby, I'm not with the baby all the time. It wasn't growing inside me. My body wasn't changing. I was watching those changes happen to my wife. But for me, parenthood really started when after Nora was born. That's when things really kicked it into gear, because as much as a father, you can prepare, you can make the nursery, or prepare the nursery, help your wife through you know, whatever she's going through at the time, because it's obviously uncomfortable for her. And it didn't change right off the bat, but that it also could be just due to the fact that I've always wanted kids, so this was more of like a, okay, it finally happened, let's get into it.
Exactly.
It's not like a oh man, I've got to change everything in my life right now. It's we set ourselves up for success, meaning like in the time of our lives too.
Right.
We had everything sorted
That's awesome.
Out. Very fortunate in that respect. So we were ready for the baby prior to even knowing we had Nora coming.
How did you decide to tell people? Well, again, I know when you told mom and dad, but how did you decide to tell people, and what was that process like? Because with Megan's family in Connecticut, it's not going to be an easy choice to go, all right, you know, who do we tell first? Is it flip of the coin, or how did that come about, so that there's no real like favoritism?
Oh, actually, that was kind of a funny story with that one. We went to dinner once, we went down to Connecticut and we went to dinner, and I had a beer. You know, everyone at the table had a drink except for my wife. And then we had some sushi because my father-in-law ordered some sushi, and all of us had sushi except for Megan. And I looked at my mother-in-law, and like she knew immediately, like we were on the same wavelength. Like, okay, she knows Megan's pregnant. Cat's out of the bag. Like already. And then Jesse, my sister-in-law, was like, maybe not. And then after dinner, we went to the house. And then my mother-in-law said to my daughter, my wife, are you feeling okay? Are you pregnant? And then Megan said, well, thanks, Mom. I guess I'll just tell you now. Yeah, I'm pregnant. And it was like, oh, cool. So it wasn't as like climactic as an exciting as telling our parents. That was awesome. We made the decision. We told... my wife's parents one weekend, and it was either later that weekend or the next weekend we told my parents, and that was we got to set it up. You know, Megan got the shirts, and I got to tell. And I remember the phrase I said to my mom and dad. I said, "What are you guys doing next May time frame?" And my dad was like, "I don't know. Why? What are you talking about?" And then I said, "Oh, do you want to be grandparents?" And like the instant, like they had, it was like my dad was like, "Really?" And then my mom like immediately burst into tears. Yeah. And dad burst into tears, and it was a very really exciting and happy moment.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. It was an awesome day.
And mom's shirt says from dog grandma to human grandma, I think, right?
I think that might be maybe they both have one. Mom.
I don't know. But I know mine says Galaxy's Best Uncle, and I'm more than happy with that one.
Yeah.
In Star Wars letters.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Ship. So fast forwarding the clocks a little bit, get into what was an insane year for everybody, 2020, and dealing with that. I remember Tom telling me a little bit about your experience, and we were all thinking how hard it was just us, but to be able to have to go to the hospital and kind of run us through when COVID hit, that timeline with, you know, everything happening, like how was that? Was it just nuts?
Yeah, it was, and it was pretty rapid fashion too. So, I think things started getting pretty intense in February timeframe, like, you know, when the whole world was aware that this thing was going to happen. And I was at work, and a lot of us were talking, like, what's going to happen with work? Are we all going to go on telework? And, you know, with my job, everyone was thinking like there's no chance that we're going to go on telework and going to be forced home. And then I think it was March 18th last year. It was like a Wednesday. We got an email that said, if you are living with someone, or if you are somebody that has like a pre-existing condition, and one of those was pregnancy, they said, all right, go home, and we'll put you on admin leave, administrative leave. And that was like a Wednesday at 11:30 or something in the morning. So half of the shipyard where I work just like walked out to their cars and went home, which was kind of like no one knows what's going to happen the next day, because, you know, with my job, we need to get things done. it was just, it was a pretty intense time. So I went home, and my wife went home, I think, like the day or day before, like administrative leave. Although she's a teacher, so she was kind of working with figuring out how to set up the stay-at-home school teaching. So we got home, and it was like, I don't know what to do now. So then we started planning things out. And at that point, Megan was, my wife was 40 weeks minus a 32. She was 32 weeks pregnant. So she's coming up to the due date. And then I think you go into the hospital like every 2 weeks at that point once you're pregnant. And I was going with her to these appointments every single time, but they stopped allowing me to do that. So I couldn't go in and help check on the baby. I had to stay home, or I would drive with her and just sit in the car. And then we started getting a little bit more information, but we were really worried at one point because we were thinking, you know, because the toilet paper was the same, you know, it was just gone everywhere. Yeah. We were wondering, like, what about diapers? What about formula? Because there was like a national formula shortage. And if there was any sort of issue, we had a little bit of a stockpile because luckily when you do claim like a baby registry on Amazon or something, they send you a free formula pack to like a sampler. Nice. So we had a little bit of a stockpile, but we were worried, you know, what if there's going to be a formula shortage? What if there's a diaper shortage? So we had a little bit of a stockpile, but definitely not enough to last us throughout the summer. We were preparing for that March and heading into April, and luckily I was really happy because I did get to stay home, you know, from March up till the point where my daughter was born in the middle of May. So it was essentially 8 weeks getting ready for the baby, and it was nice time to spend with my wife to prepare us, because if COVID didn't hit, I would have been going to work every day, and then it would have been like, all right, we got to go to the hospital. So that it was nice in that respect. But then that started the worrying, because there was no information out there for how the virus affected newborns, how it affected newborn mothers. With newborns, it takes, if I remember right, about 3 months, 12 weeks for any sort of immune system to build up. So if they get any sort of virus or anything like that, especially a pandemic, you know, something that's causing a pandemic, we have no idea how it's going to affect our daughter. So it just boosted my anxiety way up. Boosted Nora's anxiety, and you know, when you guys go to find out, once the baby is born, it is an unbelievable demand on your body just to be there when the feedings are required. It's you're pretty much up 24 hours, except for maybe 2-3 hours of sleep randomly scattered throughout the day. You need the help, and that's where we made the decision with my in-laws, like, okay, we're going to ignore the COVID thing. We need to have my in-laws here to help Megan and me get sleep and take care of my daughter. And then the same thing with our parents. It's like we need to ignore the COVID precautions. We need people here to help us out.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it wasn't the most enjoyable time I've had. You know, now that we've had a baby in the middle of a pandemic, I'm sure the next one will be whatever, you know.
Oh, it can't get any worse, I don't think. Yeah.
Well, we say that, but then, I don't know, maybe there's going to be like COVID-23 or something like that.
Alien invasion or something.
Yeah, so it's melting your skin or something horrible.
The one thing I thought of is when the pandemic hit, it was actually during that time that Megan got her first ultrasound, right?
Yeah.
When you got the first pictures of Nora, I don't remember how big she was. Was she a size of a pea? And then did that make it more real when you saw the first picture or first sonogram? Or I don't know what the hell it's called. But when you first got that picture, did it make it more real? And were you really more excited? Like, did it make it like you are going to be a dad now?
Well, the first thing happens is she takes the pregnancy test and the hormones indicate, yes, you are pregnant. And then I think around the 16-week point, I could be misremembering this, 12 weeks, somewhere in that effect, they are able to perform an ultrasound. But yeah, Nora, she was only like maybe the size of a pea or something like that. But you can still see a little flutter heartbeat. And they can, you know, they'll be able to tell with the thing, like, okay, her heart rate is 160 beats per minute or something like that. And she's only like the size of a pea. So they already have a heart, you know, it's amazing. And then I think it was January 20th, it was right around your birthday, was when we were able to do the 20-week ultrasound, which is the big one. That's when they put, like, you know, the jelly on the belly, and then they, you get to see, like, the whole face thing. And luckily, that was before COVID, so I could go in there. It would have been a real big bummer if I couldn't go in there and see that, but they put the ultrasound thing up to Megan's stomach. And the first thing you saw was Nora's skull, and you were like, whoa, what is that thing? And like, yeah, because like, there's no skin or anything. The only thing you saw was her skull, and I was like, whoa.
There's no skin?
Yeah, you don't, I mean, you don't get to see the skin with the...
Oh, you just see the outline of the...
Yeah, so ooh, that's the first thing I saw was my daughter's skull, and I was like, what is that thing? But it was good, because then after that, I could, you know, they showed like the outline of her face and different things like that, and it was really neat. But then we didn't find out then what the sex was. We didn't find out if there was a boy or girl. We had them write it down on a note or whatever. And then we gave that note to our best friends who baked us a pink cake coated in frosting. So when we cut it, we figured out it was a girl. But that was exciting. It did feel more real then. But yeah, I'll go back to, you know, I didn't have the thing growing inside of me, and yeah, in the middle of January, it's one of my hobbies is snowmobiling. So I was like, all right, you okay for this weekend? All right, I'm going to go up north and go snowmobiling for a weekend. I'll see you soon. So it was still, I was able to, at that point, you know, it was like my life was continuing on, but this thing was about to happen. And it was great. Yeah, I totally forgot what we were talking about. Oh yeah, the ultrasound. But yeah, it was neat. And then we had this, like, it was a really small, whatever, gender reveal party. But essentially, we had all of our immediate family there, and we cut the cake at the same time. It was like, oh, it's gonna be a girl.
Thankfully, we weren't the people out in California who burned down an entire forest because they were trying to do a gender reveal party.
We had some cool ideas, like putting some pink smoke in an exhaust and then blowing out the truck or whatever, but. Yeah, we decided that cutting the cake was probably the safest option. try not to burn down the Northeast.
So, as far as COVID now, it seems like it's kind of ending. And to your point, you said if you can go through that, I feel like a lot of people, and maybe even some of our parents, went through things that through COVID now they're bulletproof. Is it now that she's a little bit older and things are opening up more, I'm assuming it's incredibly more exciting, and in that stress of no sleep and everything is past, and now you're able to just completely enjoy fatherhood as it should be.
Yeah, it's going to lead into one of the questions that It's going to lead into one of the questions or the answers that to Tommy's question at the end of the show. The first 6 months it's less of fatherhood and motherhood and more of parenthood, meaning like the objective is to just keep the kid alive. feed it, change it, play with the kid a little bit, but like just try to keep her alive is like the big thing. Not as much entertaining. I mean, just play with her a little bit, but she can't, like, crawl around too much for, like, up to 6 months. You got to pick her up, hold her neck for the first month or so, which is, you wouldn't even think about it, but every time you're picking her up out of her crib, she's, like, she's got no neck control, so you're got to hold her neck. But as of recent, probably about a month and a half ago, she's able to crawl, and as of even more recent, she can start standing on her own. She can't walk, but she'll stand for, like, 2-3 seconds at a time. And she's developing into her personality, which is making parenthood seem like it's turning more into fatherhood for me. Yeah, so it's like yesterday we took her to the park for the first time, and we for her very first park, and we started going down slides and stuff, and she was a little skeptical at first, and then I let her go down the slide once, and shame on me for not expecting it, but like she had no idea what to expect when she went down a slide, so she like fell back and smoked her head on the back of the slide.
Oh man.
Yeah. And then after that though, you know, she figured it out, so maybe that's a little bit of a a parenting lesson for me. Like, let her fail the first time. She'll figure it out. She'll be okay. But yeah, she started loving the slide. We'd put her up at the top. She'd like wiggle her butt, and then she'd like go down the slide and be happy as clam doing it. And it was excellent. It was a really, to see her face at the top of the slide is like pure happiness. Yeah. And it was like, okay, it's a parenting win. And one of the things like I've always struggled with is affirming that I'm doing the right things. And with parenthood, it's just kind of escalated to a new level. Like, am I being the right father by doing X, Y, and Z? And to see her smile, it was like good feedback that, okay, I'm doing the right things. I'm carrying on in the right direction. One of the parenting advice quotes that I got from my coworker actually set the bar pretty low as a father. He said, don't give your kid daddy issues, keep your kid alive. And that's it. Like, that's the bar. That's the bar you need to meet.
Which, wow! With that, anybody can be successful.
Well, you think so, right? But I mean, we hear all these stories of like, you know, dad went to the grocery store and he never came back. And it's like, at least all of my friends that have kids, and everybody that I know of that has kids, like in our generation, a little bit younger, it seems like we're taking whatever expectations there are for fatherhood and we're just crushing it out of the park because we want to be part of our kids' lives. And I'm sure the same thing will be for you too. It's you want to be there, and because you want to be there, you will be there, and that's already, you're already doing better than you'd expect.
The question, one thing that popped up for me, do you remember what it was like when Megan started to go into labor and it's like, okay, today's the day, it's gonna be the day? And was that hellish? Was that, you know, crazy? What was that day like?
That so that day in the middle of May was burnt into my brain. It's one of those things, like, I think I remember what I did yesterday. I have no idea what I did 2 days before that, but you know, 10 months ago, like, that whole night is burnt into my brain like a hard recorded memory. Which is pretty neat. But yeah, so we were, it was around 11 o'clock on a Friday night. Megan started having like twinges every so often. And we were thinking they were what's called Braxton Hicks contraction, which is, prior to actually going into labor, the lady's body will prepare itself for labor by giving fake contractions. And those are called Braxton Hicks contractions. Never would have heard of them about them otherwise. But yeah, that Friday night they started getting more frequent, and then, you know, they would be like 30 minutes apart, and then 20 minutes apart, and then 10 minutes apart. And Megan called the doctor, and the doctor was like, yeah, you're legit going into labor. But the thing is, you don't head to the hospital right then. It's not like how they picture it in the movies where it's like the lady screams, ah, I'm in labor, and then like sprint to the hospital and the baby's here. It takes time. So Megan started having contractions, I think maybe it was around 9 o'clock, and then 11 o'clock they started getting more serious, and I pull out my phone and time them. And then they progressed into the morning until probably about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was timing them. They were about 5 minutes apart, lasting for 1 minute for an hour straight. They said it's 5-1-1, and then you head to the hospital.
Interesting.
So we headed to the hospital at like 2:30. And then, went to the hospital, got everything signed in. And because this was at like legit the middle of COVID, like the middle of May, when my wife came in, they were like, okay, I need to take your temperature. I need you to write this down. And Megan's labor was progressing rapidly. Like, they said, expect 24 to 48 hours of labor. We're like 2 hours into it, and Megan's like writhing in pain, which is, it's moving fast. And then she, like, we walked up to the counter after we got our stickers and they scanned us, and they were like, okay, can we have your medical card? And Megan's like leaning over the counter, like trying to breathe, and they're like, okay, well, can you please get us the card? And it's like, can you not see her right now? Can we have a lot of patients right now? She's in labor.
So stressful.
I know. So Yeah, so like they give her the car, they take the information down, they're like, well, we need your license too. And like, I'm starting to get angry. I'm like, can we please go to the floor, like the baby floor? We need to get there. I'll get you all this information later. They're like, no, we need it now. It's like, okay, whatever. One thing I did forget to say was later that night, so Friday night, there was a tornado warning for like our area. And I was worried that Megan was going to go into labor like in the middle of a tornado. There's going to be trees down. We're not going to be able to. Yeah, we're not going to be able to leave our house or leave the area because there's trees down everywhere. So I grabbed like 10 or 15 towels, clean water, like soap, alcohol, and I put it into our closet. Took everything out of our closet so like we could go and shelter in there in case there was a tornado. Wow. And like I needed to give emergency birth.
The icing on the cake, with COVID and everything.
It was just wild. And oh yeah, as we were heading to the hospital, we were taking my wife's car. I really wanted to take my truck, but my wife was like, no, we're not taking your stupid truck.
Be better than the Mustang.
That's what I'm saying. It would have induced labor real quick. Yeah, the check engine light came on like right as we were heading out of the driveway.
No.
Like, oh my God. But yeah, we got to the hospital and we got up into the room probably 3 o'clock or 3:30 in the morning. Like we'd been up for 24 hours pretty much at that point. The doctor came in and checked on Megan. They were like, oh yeah, this is moving real quick. You're at about 8 centimeters, which is 10 centimeters is the required dilation for you to have the baby. So we were there for a little bit. Megan ended up taking just a shower, a bath to try to like just relax a little bit from back pain, but her back was just killing her. And we had this nurse. I don't want to say her name because she was pretty horrible. But, like, Megan was clearly having problems. Like, every contraction that hit, it would be like, they'd say, hey, what's your pain level on a scale of 1 to 10? And she's like in tears, like, probably 8 or 9 on the pain scale. And they have these sensors that they're supposed to place all over you to measure, like, you know, health of the baby, health of the mommy. And she'd be like, writhing in pain, and this nurse who was like probably 60 years old who's seen this a million times is like, lady, get over it. She kept trying to put the sensors on Megan because they kept falling off, and I'd be like, you need to get out of here. Like, I need another nurse. You are just the worst person. And then like at one point that night, you know, when Megan went to go take that bath shower, I said to her, like, hey, we're going to be ready for an epidural when Megan gets out of here, so I need you to do whatever you need to do to prepare to get us the epidural, because like they had to hook her up to an IV or whatever, bring the cart in. So Megan finishes up with the shower. We step out there, and I'm like, "Hey, you know, nurse, did you get everything ready?" She's like, "No, I didn't do any of that, but it'll take about 10-15 minutes for me to get all that stuff in here." And I was like, "Are you kidding me? Like, she's ready for the epidural right now. How did you not?" I have a lot of frustrations with that nurse, and I guess that's one of the other things. If you are frustrated with the nurse, it is very easy to just say, hey, this isn't working out between us. Can I please have another nurse? So I should have done that. I didn't know that we could do that, though. Probably because half of our, like, parenting classes got canceled because of COVID. And eventually the epidural came in, and the nurse said to Megan, like, hey, you need to stay still while you're getting this epidural. And Megan's contractions are like 15 seconds apart, like can't physically untense her body. And she's like, hey, you need to relax. I need you to relax a little bit. And I wanted to just...
It's almost comical. It's almost like a movie.
Yeah, I was getting really angry. But again, this was probably like 4:30 in the morning. It's just been rapid fire since 11 o'clock. Eventually, Megan does get the epidural. Things calm down for a little bit. And then I think Megan, we could start to see Nora around 6 o'clock or so. And then Nora was finally born at 6:46. And it was amazing. It was like, it went from being us to us plus this thing, like in rapid time. And because the labor was so fast, my brain didn't have time to process everything that happened. Like our friends that had a baby, they were in the hospital for like 24 hours. So they had time to like go walk around and you know, take it in. And we did not have any of that. It was like rapid fire.
And you got to be the person who caught Nora, right?
Like, yeah.
You were the first person to hold Nora ever.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah, so when, you know, when Nora came out, they, or right before, they said, "Hey, do you want to catch her?" And I was like, "Cool, yeah, that sounds awesome." and like, I went, you know, went to go catch her, and like, I just had my bare hands because I didn't, you know, and they like threw the gloves at me, and they were like, "You need to put gloves on, you idiot." Like, oh yeah, yeah, it's, I forgot about those
good
things.
Point.
Yeah, I didn't clean. Yeah, I don't have clean hands. But yeah, I caught Nora, and I got to put Nora on Megan's chest, and they had some chest to chest time, and it was just amazing. It was like, it was just so rapid fire. But even then, like, it wasn't like my life immediately. It's hard to explain, but I knew that my life changed, but I didn't have processing time. I didn't
so
have time.
Fast,
to, yeah, it was so fast, man. Like, 7 hours ago, I was watching, you know, I don't know, New Girl or something like that. And then, like, yeah, 8 hours later, I had my daughter and I was changing her diaper for the first time. There was, like, no processing time. But that's, I guess, you know, that is common for fathers because you're not growing with the baby. Your body's not changing. It's like you're, you know, I was married at the time. I was just a husband. And then, boom, you're a father. It's a rapid change of pace.
So we're getting toward the end, and I've got like 1,000 more questions, which kind of sucks. But before we go into our final two questions, one question I wanted to ask, which is unique to your situation, is very, very broad. What are your hopes for Nora?
That's a good one. My hopes for Nora, I want her to, first and foremost, probably a generic one, but be a good person. I want her to love with all of her heart and soul. I want her to have, I want her to have more patience than I do. I typically react to situations quickly and don't process all the information. You're laughing. I don't process all of the information. I don't take time. I react strongly and quickly. I wish I didn't do that. I've been working on it, but it's just hard to change something that's so deep rooted. And Megan will help with that. Megan's very good at taking time to process things, and I hope she gets Megan's sense in that. I want her to be self-sustaining. Like Tommy knows, I try to do everything on my own. Yeah, you guys were talking about that story that I took Tommy's iPod and tried to fix it and totally broke it. But I try to do everything on my own, and I want to instill that in Nora, a sense of, like Allie that you had on earlier, be able to do everything that she needs to. She doesn't need anybody to tell her how to do it. And then we're trying to set her up for success. We've got a college fund save started. We got a college fund that we started like pretty much the second that she was born, with money from my great grandmother, her great great grandmother, and we've been contributing to it. So whatever she decides to do endeavors in the future, set her up for success so that she can just go and pursue whatever dream she wants. So that's what I want for her. I want her to have a happy life, and know that she's always loved, and in whatever decision that she makes.
Well, that's really cool. And I don't, there are fewer people in this world, or I don't know how many people in this world are loved as much as that kid is, like, instantly, just from everybody in her family.
And I think it shows in her attitude. I know I've had to do a lot of growth through my years to be where I'm at now. Like just tolerance, just trying to be tolerant. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Like, be more tolerating, I guess, of differences. I'm trying, and Megan's already really, really good at that. I mean, she's as good as it can be. So I think we've got a happy home, and then she's loved by all of the family, like Tommy was saying, that she has, and it sets her up to be a happy person. If you have an unhappy home, then I would think that Nora would grow up to be unhappy. But she's, I mean, she's happy right off the get go, always smiling, except when you go to like change her
or hand her off to somebody who's not mom and dad to hold her, and she screams.
Yeah,
that'll change.
Yeah, it'll change. It'll change. But yeah.
So this kind of segues beautifully into it, but what you were saying a little bit before, and this is kind of my final question I'd like to ask, you were figuring all this stuff out on your own. You were self-questioning yourself sometimes about, you know, how to do certain things. What's your advice for someone that's going through a similar situation, first-time parent? And luckily, like we were just talking about, the pandemic is kind of coming to a close, so that's awesome. So hopefully I don't have to deal with that. Yeah. But what's your advice for someone that's going through this for the first time and they're clueless? They don't know what to do, I guess. This is the first time.
It's actually perfectly answered by one of the books that we read to Nora, Pout Pout Fish, in the Can't Sleep Blues. But it says, you know, the story of this is like the fish can't sleep, so he goes to all of his friends, and all the friends like give him different advice, and he's like, none of this is working for me. I can't go to sleep. And one of the other fishers comes along and says, the best advice of all is learn what works for you and make your own special blend. So, when you grow up, I'm sure there are things, I mean, I had about as good parents as anybody can ever have. But there are things that that I wanted to maybe act a little differently than my parents in. So I'll take all those lessons learned from my parents and then just add a little bit. And if you want to be a dad, I don't know if you're the type that would, you know, if you're the type of person that would read a book, you're reading a book, in my opinion, you're reading a book on somebody else on how to be a parent. There's no one right way to do this thing. There are wrong ways to do it, no doubt. I mean, you have to listen to music, and then all you hear is like people that say, "Oh, my dad wasn't here for me." That's the one constant, is like you need to be there for your kid, that you can hold over from all these fathers that didn't do that. But learning what works for you, it's more natural than you think. And if you are questioning yourself, which you always will, if you are a good parent, you will always question yourself. Did I do the right things? Should I have acted differently? Take those and learn from those lessons. If I have a clear memory of Nora playing on my chest in bed, and then she leeches over because she leans with her head, because she's like a weeble wobble, but she always falls down. Like the heavy part is the head, so she like leaned with the head and fell right off the bed. And I was like, oh, that was a bad parenting move. But you know, I'll move my body a little bit the next time and prevent it from happening again. But yeah, I guess overall summarizes the best advice I can give is, take lessons that you have from being a kid of what your parents did. If you want to make some changes, make those changes, and trust yourself. I have a tough time trusting myself, but I know I'm doing the right things by seeing my daughter's face on the top of a slide in pure happiness. It's like, okay, I did it. I'm doing okay.
So my last question, and you mentioned it earlier, is the eternal, I like to ask it. It's, how do you know you're happy, or how will you know when you're happy? And if you are, how do you know you are? Which is a very wordy way of hopefully making sense.
Yeah, that's fine. I have experienced, I would say overall, I do have a happy life, but I've experienced pure happiness a handful of times, and they're burnt into my brain. The first one was from college. I went to school for mechanical engineering. I had a tough time getting an internship when all my friends were getting internships. I eventually got one, but then December of my senior year, I interviewed with the shipyard where I work now, and I had 5 different interviews because there's a billion different jobs there, and I got 5 job offers. I got the phone call, and they said, Steve, you did a great job. You have 5 job offers. And I remember saying, what? And they said, yeah, you got offers to five places. And I said, are you kidding me? Because, like, that was the, all of the work that I had done up to that point in my life, it was, it finally got answered. I was like, oh my, you know, I remember calling my dad and giving him that information. And that was pure happiness. And then it was a little bit of a hiatus, but the next one was when I saw my wife walking down the aisle. Burnt into my brain is just one of the best moments, if not the best moment of my life, was seeing Megan walk down the aisle and just being as happy as I had ever been in my life. You know, Tommy was standing right next to me. And then after that one, even following Nora, I wouldn't say Nora's birth was a pure happiness moment, just due to the fact that my brain was just trying to process that moment. But to me, pure happiness is being able to ignore all of the other things going on in your life and just be there in that moment. I have a tough time with it because, you know, I have ADHD and, like, my brain's always running at a million miles an hour. Should I be doing this? Should I be doing this? I should be doing this instead. But when I'm able to block that out and then just experience the moment, that's when pure happiness is for me. And I experienced it yesterday when I saw my daughter up on the slide and her, like, face of just, she was as happy as she could be sitting on top of a plastic slide. And there was one other moment a few weeks ago where I was able to block everything out, and then I looked at my daughter and she was crawling on the ground and she looked at me and then screamed and then started, like, scooting away as fast as she could, like she wanted me to catch up to her. Yeah, and at that moment, I was purely happy. So yeah, that was pure happiness to me, is being able to block out all of these things that I think about on a daily basis and focus on a really nice moment in time. And I've been one of the fortunate people to experience that. And it seems like it's getting more frequent as Nora gets older.
Well, that's really cool. And it's the thing I always like about that question is that everybody always has their different version of happiness. And, you know, Nick was waking up come Monday morning and liking what he does for work, which is very simple. But you have a very intricate one that revolves around kind of becoming an adult. It's your wedding, and then Nora, and then those are things that come with age. They're not necessarily things that we can experience right now because we are not in your shoes or in a similar situation. But at the same time, it's something that we can look forward to, and it's horrible to say, but it's like your best days are not behind you, which, you know, God forbid that happened for anybody, but it's nice to look forward to that. And I know Mom also brought this up, is that the happiest she's been is when it was, I can't remember which, I think it was Christmas, and she had you guys there and me there and Dad and then Nora, and everybody was in one spot. And that's something that comes with age. It's not something that's already behind us.
Well, I mean, and the good thing is, you know, yes, it comes with age, but enjoy the moments that you're in. And I mean, the three of you guys living together, it won't be too long. It stinks to say, but you guys won't be living together for forever. You know, my wife and I, we did a lot of cool things throughout our lives. We lived on a boat for a few years. We lived, you know, all over the place. We've been to San Diego. We drove across the country. We've gone to Bermuda. We've done all of these things. And trying to find the beauty in each of those moments, because there are times where, you know, I miss living on the boat. I miss going home and cracking a beer, sitting on the back of the deck, and then watching the water roll by. You know, I do miss those times sometimes. Even post Nora, because, like, I'll be exhausted. After a full day of work, 9 hours, I drive home on Route 16. I see people from Massachusetts cutting me off, and, like, my rage just goes up. And then I think, you know what, I've got to be the best that I can be at home right now, and I just don't have the energy to do it. And when you guys are, you know, you guys have, you know, your own lives, you have girlfriends, you're living together, but try to enjoy this time right now, because each phase of your life has its moments like that. They really do, and try to take advantage of that, I guess, is is the biggest thing that I've learned and I'm trying to take advantage of. Don't look necessarily forward to the next thing or the thing after that or the thing after that. Try to be happy where you are right now, because things may be tough, but there are going to be times where you look back and think, you know what, that was pretty sweet when, you know, I played Blake and I beat him for the 19th time in a row, or, you know, and you smoked Tommy in 2.5 minutes and whatever in Yu-Gi-Oh or something. It's, you're going to miss those times
for sure.
Well, this is going to be our longest episode by far, but I don't really want to cut out anything other than the part where we had to change batteries or where we basically dropped the microphone. But I think this is pretty much where we wrap it up. Any last ideas, Blake? Or any
no, that was incredible.
Yeah, that was... Thank really. You very much, Stevie. And this is insight that can only really come from a parent. And it's just, I also just like having you on because you're my brother. So there's that, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy that you guys started this up. It's pretty awesome. I hope it gets big. I would say try to stay away from interviewing certain people like our family members. There's no doubt in my mind that if you were to interview some family members, you'd probably get some views, maybe a few calls from the cops. No, I'm really happy you guys are doing this and that you decided to take the plunge. Yeah, and I'll always be here to interview you again and tell you some crazy Nora stories or whatever, school, work, anything.
Well, like I said, there are 1,000 more questions. And this isn't even getting into the fact that you raced a race car, you were a nuclear engineer, and that we play on a hockey team, and you are the reason I got in my only fight ever. So there is that, too.
Yeah, I remember you bringing that up in the previous episode. That was pretty awesome. I went to the gym for like 15 minutes and then decided I was the strongest man on the ice, and then my brother had to defend me. So that was pretty... It's a pretty awesome moment.
Well, we'll wrap it up here. And if you do enjoy the show, please give us a rating on iTunes or give us a good review on with your friends or family. And thank you very much. And we'll tune in next week with a new guest and with some great new stories.
See you then. Peace.